everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 68 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Extreme Wheat, Pushing Yields Higher, about a presentation by Peter Berry, crop physiology and principal scientist at ADIS UK Limited. ADIS, spelled with capital letters, A-D-A-S, is an independent research and consulting firm focused on improving agricultural production efficiency. Although I disagree with Berry's laser-like focus on yield at the expense of quality, it was nevertheless refreshing to hear him talk about our favorite crop from outside the echo chamber of the Northwest and even the United States. If you didn't catch it, his company is based in the United Kingdom and he lives in the town of York, about a 3-hour drive from London. I'm not saying Berry is a better researcher than our homegrown variety, but he did bring a different perspective to his December 6, 2017 Spokane presentation, not to mention a different accent and word choice. When was the last time you heard of high wheat yields being described as brilliant, or heads of wheat referred to as ears? Berry's presentation was part of Wheat U, an educational program hosted by the Kansas-based newspaper The High Plains Journal, with local sponsorship including the Capital Press, BASF, and AMMO, the Agricultural Marketing and Management Organization, which the Washington Association of Wheat Growers is behind. Berry's perspective, as I indicated, is about squeezing every last drop of potential out of the resources of the wheat plant and the inputs at its disposal. He said to understand the principles behind wheat plant growth, it's important to understand how the primary resources combine to achieve yield. Resources available to dryland farmers includes things like sunlight, precipitation, timing, nitrogen, and fungicide application, not to mention plant growth regulators, called PGRs, which are used to keep the high-yielding crops from falling over or lodging. All things considered, Berry believes the upper yield limit for wheat is around 320 bushels an acre. Let me say that again. 320 bushels an acre. That got your attention, didn't it? Of course, Berry added that sort of yield is based on what is theoretically possible given available resources. Those resources, however, must be coupled with technology and genetics that don't exist right now. His clarification was a bit of a letdown, like saying that with the right technology and genetics, humans could grow 9 feet tall. Thankfully, most of Berry's presentation addressed what is possible now, which he believes is quite a lot. For those who may not be familiar with Pacific Northwest wheat yields, consider that Eastern Washington had a record 2016 wheat yield with production across the state averaging 75 bushels an acre. That's the average, and in a good year, individual dryland farmers in parts of the Palouse can yield more than 140 bushels an acre, with irrigated growers in the basin consistently nudging 200 bushels an acre. Wheat yields in the UK have plateaued since around the year 2000, which is not good news in a country where the crop provides farmers with their biggest gross margins. Berry began his presentation citing a New Zealand farmer as the inspiration for yields that are already possible.
Inspiration that we can increase yields substantially comes from this man here. His name is Mike Solari. He's a New Zealander from South Island, and he broke the world wheat record in 2010 with an astonishing 235 bushels per acre, which at the time was a big jump from the previous record yield, which hadn't changed for a large number of years. Now, Mike had approached us to ask us to help him work out how much nitrogen fertilizer to apply to his crop. So that's how we got involved with him. But whilst working with Mike, we got interested in how on earth does he achieve such high yields? What is it about his environment or the way he farms that enables him to get such brilliant yields? And we looked at his environment, the solar radiation and the water, And we thought, well, Mike's environment is good, but it's not that much better than the UK, so surely we can do better in the UK. And that's what really started us on this road. Oh yes, we advised it to put on 400 pounds of nitrogen per acre. And perhaps the most amazing thing is that he did actually apply that much. But I do hasten to add that if you look at the amount of nitrogen taken off his crop in the grain, it is about 282 pounds per acre. And that means his total nitrogen uptake by his crop would have been close to about 400 pounds per acre. Now, you can make some really complicated models for wheat yield. We like to keep it simple. And we could describe wheat yield in terms of the amount of resource that the environment provides in terms of solar radiation and water. And look, we're measuring solar radiation in terms of terajoules per acre and water in terms of inches. What percentage of these primary resources can our crop capture? And then what efficiency rate can the crop convert those resources into dry matter? And then finally, having accumulated lots of dry matter, hopefully, how much of that can be partitioned into the grain? So that's, in a nutshell, wheat yield. And it's driven by the primary resources and the ability of a crop to capture and convert them. So in the UK, we've estimated that our best crop could capture about 60% of available light. You might think, well, that's not very much, but it's difficult to do better than that because we still need to have time for the crop to ripen, and you've still got to harvest it, you've got to have time to re-establish the following crop. So it's difficult on an annual crop to beat that. Water, we estimate that the best we could achieve is roots down to 6 feet and extracting 75% of the available water down to that depth. And we see these targets as mainly jobs for the crop manager, the grower, to achieve through improving crop husbandry. But undoubtedly, improved genetics will come into play. So let's just now think about the ultimate yield potential in the UK. Now, this is the ultimate potential that our environment, with the light and the water that we've got, could support. It couldn't be achieved today, because we would need improvements in varieties and agronomic technologies to actually get to this yield. But we think that we can extend the canopy, both in terms of the earliness of its expansion and how long it lasts during grain filling, to intercept 60% of the light. We think it's plausible to have a high conversion efficiency of 1.4 tonnes per terajoule and accumulate 11 tonnes per acre of dry matter. And we reckon that it's possible to partition 60% of that dry matter to yield. And that gives us a ultimate yield potential of 320 bushels per acre. And that sounds extraordinary, I know. And when we first started talking about this to farmers, we were laughed at, really, and probably quite rightly so. But it's an ultimate target. And as you'll see later, we have got growers now who are achieving in excess of 250 bushels per acre. So it's not as mad as you might think. Nonetheless, it's still a substantial gap between what we achieve at the moment in our country and what could be achieved.
To help bridge the gap between today's best yields and the best potential yields is what Barry calls the innovation gap. ADIS set up what they called a yield enhancement network, called YEN for short, with the goal of bridging that divide. Today's best farmers are the key, Barry said, because much of the innovation that occurs in agriculture begins on the farm. As a result, Yen's goal is to convert good ideas into good yields by working with innovators to help them with their innovating. Or as he summarized the program, Yen promotes better than best practices.
There are three main elements to the network. The first one is a yield competition. It runs similarly to the one you've got in this country. It's completely open. You need at least a 5-acre area. The yield must be independently validated over a weighbridge. So there's no sort of pub yields here. It's real validated yields. The farmer sends in information about the crop, the soil, the environment. He also sends in grain samples and crop samples, which ADAS analyse to understand how the crop has achieved the yield it achieves. The competition has two prizes, one for the absolute yield and one for the best percentage of the potential yield. And sometimes we find that the farmer who wins that is on a poor sandy soil, who doesn't achieve a very high yield but has achieved the best percentage of the potential. The second element is analysis. There's loads of data produced. We analyse it to understand how the yields were formed and perhaps more importantly, what was constraining the yield from being even greater. And then the networking, also really important. Having identified the constraints, we then need to figure out some solutions. And it's the networking part which enables us to do that. So ultimately, it's a way of getting together industry and scientists, particularly farmers and scientists, to work together to crack these problems. And when we look at all the data from all the entrants over all the years, we can start to understand what characteristics of a crop are important for achieving high yields. And this shows us that, for example, the number of grains per square foot is really important. And to get lots of grains per square foot, we need lots of ears per square foot. So we need to start thinking about how to manage our crops to maximise ear number. We also find that simple total biomass of a crop relates very well to the yield. Now, that's not a surprise because yield is a component of total biomass, of course. But we also find that there's a correlation between the straw yield and the grain yield. So if you've got a world record grain yield, you might also have a world record straw yield. Now, this is important because until maybe a decade ago, breeders were improving yield by improving the harvest index. We had a pretty constant total biomass, and we were simply increasing yield by partitioning more of the dry matter to the grain. That appears to have changed now, so that we really need to increase total biomass in order to achieve greater yields. And that requires a different sort of management mindset. Other things we've learned from the competition are that the competitors nearly always have a really great attention to agronomic detail. For example, last year's winner applied the nitrogen 5 splits to try and improve the efficiency of uptake of nitrogen. But it is amazing just how much attention to detail they give the crop, particularly in terms of timings of inputs. And we do find that timings of inputs are just as important as amounts in terms of what determines which crops have got the highest yield. We also see that high-yielding farmers are willing to take risks and try out new ideas. Now, here's an example here of one of our farmer entrants. He thought that he had some deep compaction, so he had this idea that he could inject air down to about 6 feet to blast open that deep compaction. He called it his soil fracking. So this guy spent days and days driving around a few acres of his field fracking on his soil. And guess what? It didn't work. It had no effect at all on his yield. And even if it did have an effect, it probably wouldn't, well, it would definitely not have been economic. But that's not the point with Yen. We want the farmers to try out ideas like this, because if that had have worked, the next job would have been to develop that technology into something much more cost efficient so that you could derive an economic benefit from that approach. Other ideas that the farmers have been testing out have been the use of cover crops to break up deep soil compaction, little and often nitrogen applications and applications of other nutrients, hormonal growth enhancers, reflective tape placed between the rows to reflect light back up into the crop to reduce wasted light, and that did increase yield, but it took a hell of a long time to stick it all out. But, you know, that might be another idea. It might be that we don't need to put tape, we just spray the soil with a reflective paint or something like that. These are the sort of ideas we're testing out. Cooling the crop with refrigerators didn't work. Irrigation, we know that works in places. Adding earthworms, jury's still out. So there's all sorts of ideas being tested. In 2015, one of the entrants, Tim Lammiman, broke the world record yield with an amazing 247 bushels per acre. Now, because we know lots about his field, because he's an entered yen, we know how much light and how much water the crop has got. And we actually worked out that his yield potential was 336 bushels per acre. Now, Tim seemed a bit miffed when we said to him, well done, Tim, you have broken a world record, but you could do a bit better.
There are differences between the methods UK farmers use to raise wheat and US farmers. Barry said a rule of thumb in England is that every bushel of yield requires an additional pound of nitrogen. There are other differences as well.
But the main differences that we found were threefold. Firstly, the UK is applying quite substantially more nitrogen fertiliser at 170 pounds of N per acre. There's probably about an extra round of fungicides going on, and there's a much greater use of plant growth regulators, with, on average, about two rounds of plant growth regulators going on. So in the UK, the farmers are really focusing on keeping the top three leaves clean, with the first big fungicide is going on at the Feeks 7 stage, and that coincides approximately with the third to last leaf. And then the next fungicide is going on at flag leaf to protect the flag leaf. And it's that interval between those two applications, the Feeks 7 and Feeks 9, is really critical. It can't be more than 3 or 4 weeks, otherwise the efficacy of a fungicide won't last that long and disease will get in. So there's an obsession, really, with keeping that interval just right and not allowing it to get too long. In the higher disease risk regions, an earlier fungicide is also commonly applied to stop the epidemic getting out of control before we get to the Feeks 7 stage. What the farmers are trying to do is trying to get the point B halfway up the curve, which is the sweet spot, the economic optimum, the point at which an extra pound of nitrogen isn't paid for by the extra yield. That's what we're all trying to aim for. And what we've found in the UK is that for higher yielding crops, the point B, the economic optimum, moves upwards and to the right. And as a rule of thumb, for every extra bushel of yield, you need an extra pound of nitrogen to move towards that economic optimum. And that will give you a greater gross margin over the nitrogen costs. Another way of looking at this is to estimate, well, how much nitrogen is taken up by different yielding crops if we are to maintain the protein concentrations in the grain. And this shows us that for, you know, a 200 bushel per acre crop would need to take up about 300 pounds of N per acre. Of course, not all that needs to come from fertiliser. Some would come from the soil as well. So we see getting the nitrogen level right is really important for achieving yield potential. Yeah, typically the nitrogen is applied in 2 or 3 splits in the UK. 5 or more is pretty uncommon. And as yet, nobody has done an experiment to sort of prove that the multiple splits actually result in better use efficiency and better yield. There's still a big sort of division between what we call lumpers and splitters. We are really conscious about making sure we're not over-applying the nutrients, particularly the nitrogen fertiliser, because in the UK we have very strict rules about nitrate vulnerable zones. So we're really trying to make sure we're not putting too much on, and we measure the amount of nitrogen taken off in the crop and the amount of nitrogen taken up. I think we need to keep the pressure on ourselves, really, to make sure we're not overdoing it with the nitrogen. But simple economics will prevent farmers from putting too much on, I think.
BASF partnered with ADIS a year ago, asking the company to evaluate the yield potential and yield constraints in several northeastern U.S. states. Barry was cautious about applying knowledge from the U.K. to the U.S., but...
It looked like that region of the U.S. has got some fabulous conditions for achieving high yields. Lots of sunshine, adequate rain, which more than compensate for the high temperatures during late spring and summer. Possible areas for agronomic development could be optimising the nitrogen fertiliser rate to meet the demand for high yield, optimising nitrogen timings to help build the right size canopy and then prolong it as long as possible, fungicide timings to really effectively protect the crop and to again prolong the canopy, and then PGRs to keep the crop standing and make sure that yield potential isn't lost. And in the short to medium term, we felt that gains of 15 to 30 bushels were possible.
Of course, Mother Nature can already enhance yields by 15 to 30 bushels in good years, but Barry is talking about a new plateau, where instead of a 50 bushel an acre average yield in a place like Wilbur, the new normal becomes more like 70, and in a place like Oaksdale, 120. In my conversations with our Washington State University wheat breeders, they already believe yield enhancement is possible through better seed genetics. If we can mirror that with only marginally better practices in the field, Barry's near-term yield improvement doesn't seem so far-fetched. And after that, 320, here we come. That's all the time I have. I hope you've enjoyed episode 68, Extreme Wheat. Pushing yields higher. Please join me again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It.
We love the land. The farm's our career. But make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun and we have our say. But Mrs. N, she points the way. We feed you.